Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook, a show designed to engage, empower, and educate listeners with the right information at the right time to make the right decisions. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. This is where we showcase entrepreneurs, small businesses, churches, and nonprofit organizations. And to learn how you can showcase your business or organization, go to our website at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade Talk Radio, all one word, .blogspot.com. And today, I would like to welcome my co-host, Jima, to the show. Jima is the director of training at TaylorMade. In addition, Jima is the author of the famous Ask Jima blog. And to check out her latest posts, go out to askjima.blogspot.com. That's askjema.blogspot.com. And so today we will be joined by Lawrence B. Jones III. Now, Lawrence is an author. He's a businessman and CEO of Jones for Teen Youth Organization. Lawrence served as the Garland District 6 Obama campaign coordinator, and in the spring of 2008, he was named the youth mayor of Garland by the mayor of the city of Garland. Now, Lawrence is on his second term as youth mayor and continues to reduce the juvenile crime rate. In 2010, the governor of Texas, Rick Perry, as well as a member of Congress, appointed Lawrence as junior senator of Texas. You do not want to miss this segment. He has an announcement coming up, and it's going to be a very, very significant announcement. So stay tuned. Do not go anywhere. But before we get started, I would like to say Happy New Year to everyone. I know many of you have made New Year resolutions, and I would just love to hear all about them. So to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter at TaylorMade101. Now, today I'm broadcasting live streaming video at our website, and that is TaylorMade101.com. And when you get out there, just click on Live Broadcast. But first, let's take a look at our current events. Now, I mentioned early on about Happy New Year, and I was talking about the fact that we make New Year's resolutions, and we have these special traditions. So many of you know I do a segment called Moment of Reflections, and this week's Moment of Reflections is going to be about New Year resolutions. New Year resolution. So let me take a moment here to talk about the tradition of New Year's resolution. It goes all the way back to 153 BC. Janus, a mythical king of early Rome, was placed at the head of the calendar. Now, with two faces, Janus could look back on past events and forward to future. Janus became the ancient symbol for resolutions, and many Romans looked for forgiveness from their enemies and also exchanged gifts from the beginning of the year. Now, the new year has not always begun on January the 1st, and it doesn't begin on that date everywhere today. It begins on a date only for cultures that use a 365-day solar calendar. January 1st became the beginning of the new year in 46 BC, where Julius Caesar develop a calendar that will more accurately reflect the seasons than previous calendars did. The Romans named the first month of the year after Janus, the god of beginnings and the guardians of doors and entrances. He was also depicted with two faces on one of the front his head and one on the back. Thus, he could look backward and forward at the same time at midnight on December the 31st. The Romans imagined Janus looking back at the old year and forward to the new year. Now, although this New Year's date is not the same in every culture, it is always a time for celebrations and customs to ensure good luck in the coming year. So speaking of good luck in the coming year, I want to take a time to reflect on this. Now, I want to talk about, for a moment, what your traditions are. Now, one of our traditions is to go to watch night services. I remember my mom, when I was growing up, she used to tell me, you know, to do these certain things on New Year's Eve. She would say, of course, we must eat our traditional New Year's Eve dinner, right, which consists of black-eyed peas, collard greens, hog jaws. And one of the interesting things about the black-eyed peas, though, were the fact that she would tell us that we needed to carry the black-eyed peas with us throughout the rest of the year. So I always now think of that when it's around New Year's time about some of our traditions and the fact that my mom would have me put black-eyed peas in some foil paper so it's supposed to bring us good luck. Another thing my mother used to say was don't wash your clothes on New Year's Day. And wash somebody out of your family. I mean, I could go on and on and on about all of these traditions and all of the things we do, and I would love to hear about yours. So to join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Again, that number is 323-580-5712. Now, so while we're opening up the phone lines, I want to bring in my co-host today, Jima. And so, Jima, you with us?
I am.
Okay. I want you to tell our listeners where you grew up and about some of your New Year's celebrations and tradition.
Well, like you, I did grow up going to church on New Year's Eve and going to watch night service on New Year's Eve, being in church and all of that and preparing the next day's meal, which consisted of what you said, some black eyed peas, some greens, some yams or something along that line. So a lot of those traditions that we had in our family as well, growing up down in Arkansas and Kansas City. And I've carried the majority of them with me right into my adult life. I spent New Year's Eve at church and came in and got my peas ready and got my greens ready. So some things I think are good for us to remember.
Right, right. Okay, I'm going to also go to our phone lines. I'm going to go to our caller, 313 area code 9674. Caller, you there?
Yes, I'm here.
With you. Welcome to Current Events. State your name and tell us a little bit about your tradition.
My name is Freddie Poindexter Scott, and I, too, am from Kansas City. I have roots in the South, like the two of you. My family comes out of Louisiana, but, you know, the South carries far because our traditions are just the same. We have black-eyed peas for good luck, and, you know, we have to do that. And, of course, we spend our evenings at watch night service as well. And we do greens, you know, for money and good luck also. All those things that you guys spoke about. And then my family, we have even some kind of crazier traditions coming out of Louisiana to add to that. One of the things that my family likes to do, and probably by today's standards, it's not the healthiest thing in the world, but it's a lot of fun, is that they pretty much have a head cheese off. And
wow.
That is where it's incredible. A number of members of my family actually prepare head cheese. It's the one day of the year they really allow themselves to do this. And just watching the process, which was carried over from generations of actually selecting the hog head and going through the process of making it and you know, taking the fat out of it and all that kind of thing. It's pretty something. It's pretty much something to behold. Now, I'm wondering how far that tradition is going to go in our younger generations, because somehow I don't see them going out to buy hog heads and make head cheese. But, you know, notwithstanding the potential, you know, health issues that we could raise with that, just to talk about being Southern and to, you know, come from a farming background and a sharecropping background and to be able to pass things along, because, you know, with those types of traditions come, you know, hard work and the ability to communicate across generations. It's, you know, there are other things to take out of that. And so that's just one of the probably unique features of my family and traditions that we carry into the new year.
Wow. And I talked about some of the ones that we do in my family, which is don't wash your clothes on New Year's Day. Have you heard anything about that?
Absolutely. Same thing here. You know, we could probably talk all day long about those type of I don't even know what you want to call them, but, you know, those sort of isms that we get from our grandparents and what have you. And, you know, on the one hand, you kind of think, well, you know, the notion of me washing on New Year's Day and washing somebody out of my family may be kind of silly, but I don't do it.
Me either. Me either. I mean, even to this day, I mean, you know, I make sure I do all of my washes like 2 days before, because sometimes I forget if it's New Year's Eve or if it's New Year's Day, so I try to get everything out of the way at least 2 days away so I won't be caught up in that drama. And, you know, I don't know if it's true or not, but since my mama said it, in most cases, you know, it's law in my
eyes. Right.
Now, Jim, I want to talk a little bit about New Year's resolution, right? That's another big thing we talked about. People, you know, they go out and they have all of these traditions. They go to church. Some people go out to parties, they toast. You have in New York, they drop the big ball, right? The last 10 seconds, right? And so those are some of the traditions or customs that people are used to over year in and year out. But the second thing we do around this time is make New Year's resolutions, right? So, Jima, did you make any New Year's resolutions this year?
Well, you know, I resolved not to resolve. No, I'm kidding. I won't call them resolutions as I get older, because it just seems so not genuine to call it a resolution. So I've decided that I'm just gonna do something. I'm just gonna work a little harder at reaching some of my goals that I'm gonna set for myself this year. So I set some goals.
Okay. And you want to share in with us, our audience?
I do plan, one of my goals is to be as open as I can to change.
Okay.
And to embrace it more quickly than I've done in the past.
Okay. Freddie, do you have any New Year's resolutions?
You know, I have not finished sort of thinking about what my New Year's resolutions will be. But one of the things that I certainly said that I would do this year is try very hard to dial more into my instincts about knowing, you know, just I think oftentimes we get so caught up in, you know, the world and process, and we ignore what our internal selves are telling us. And, you know, the one thing that I can say that I do resolve to do this year is to be more down into those God-given instincts and just natural vibes and feelings we get about things, because I kind of had last year lost my way with that. So I'm looking forward to just being more dialed in internally, externally, globally. So I'm looking forward to that. But that's about the only one that I've gotten through so far.
Wow, that's interesting. I know we went to church today, and our pastor was talking about the fact that there was so much business going on in the world. You know, people are, you know, working, you know, 3 and 4 jobs. They're on Facebook all the day. They're on Twitter, and they're on all of these different social networks, and they're just, you know, they're just so busy with just so much streaming information that very seldom people get a time to go to their hiding place, somewhere they can, you know, really get solitude. And so to hear you say that was like confirmation, you know, to get somewhere and to be able to, you know, to become one with yourself, if you will. I think that's excellent. And that kind of resonated from what we talked about today.
Wow.
Now, as for me, I would say I'm like Jim. I don't know if I made a New Year's resolution or not, but I did. Come up with a few, and basically, I just picked a theme. I want to say, and so my theme and everything that I want to be doing throughout this rest of the year is really about getting healthy. I want to keep it in forefront of my mind. I want to make sure that I'm talking about physically and financially health in everything that I do, in my spiritual life, my family life, and my personal life. You know, I want to get them all to align in this particular area. And so that means, you know, paying off debt, saving more money, you know, losing weight, you know, my skin, everything with respect to getting healthy, and that's what I'm going to be focused on. And I would love to hear from my callers out there. I'm going to open up the phone lines right now. And the number to dial is 323-580-5712. All right, let's go to area code 214, the last four, 2864. You there?
How you doing, Brother Cook?
I am absolutely wonderful. You're on Current Events with Patrick Cook. You having comments or questions?
Yes, about the New Year's resolutions.
Okay.
As you know, this will be my last year in high school, and so 2011 is supposed to be the year. That's what I call it. This is it. As Michael Jackson's last movie is, this is it. This is the year that I plan to make it to the top. I'm going to do all my goal is to go to college and just have fun and enjoy these last couple of months of high school.
That's
my theme. This is it.
Outstanding. Okay, we're going to open up another call, a line here. All right, area code 214, last four, 7815.
Mr. Cook, this is Leo Van Hicks calling. How are you?
Hey, Mr. Hicks, we're absolutely wonderful. Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook.
Hey, well, thanks a lot. Are you all talking about New Year's resolutions?
We are.
You know, I had wanted to talk about that situation where the prosecutor had charged the young man, I think it was in Pittsburgh, I'm not sure, who looked at the email of his on his wife's computer.
We're definitely going to talk about that as well.
You're going to talk about some of that?
Absolutely.
Okay, well, then let me tell you what New Year's resolutions that I have made. I really don't believe so much in New Year's resolutions, but I have decided this, that I need to do a better job of getting in touch with my spirituality.
Okay.
And that may even mean that I'm about to join a church.
Oh,
my.
Yeah. Well, wait a minute. it's not that big a deal, really. But I was talking to someone just the other day, and I tend to be a critic of churches, African-American churches. I just don't think that they are doing enough to build capacity. And so I was sharing that with a friend of mine, and the friend of mine told me, well, then, Leo, you need to join the church. I mean, how are you going to make those changes? How is the church going to make those changes unless people like you join the church and make that happen? And I think that's a wise comment.
I'm so glad you said that because, you know, I know you from working with you over the last year, and you have so much to offer. And so when I hear, you know, someone of your capacity talk about what's going on with the church, and I agree with you in a lot of cases, but for you to hear you say that you want to now become a part of the solution, which, you know, is right in line with your show, Solutions with Leo Baron Hicks, is absolutely awesome.
Yeah, I mean it doesn't take a lot of courage or a lot of skills to criticize. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you got some problems, jump in there, roll up your sleeves, and make it happen. So that's what I need to do.
Absolutely. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, and today, right now, we're talking about New Year's celebrations and traditions. And coming up next, we're going to be talking to our very special guest. Excuse me. We're going to be talking to our special guest, and he's going to have a big announcement coming up. Lawrence B. Jones is going to be having a big announcement coming up. Just stay tuned. Okay, Mr. Jones, you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Absolutely. That's wonderful. Okay, so I talked about earlier you're going to be joining the show, and the fact that you're an author, a businessman, CEO of Jones for Teens Youth Organization, and you served as the Garland District 6 Obama campaign coordinator. You've also is selected, appointed by the as the Juno Center of Texas by Rick Perry. And the last time you were on the show was about 10 months ago. So tell the callers what has happened over the last few months.
Well, in these last couple months, I've been doing quite a few things. I've visited a couple schools, getting them active and involved. And I've noticed that they're really concerned about their country, their city, their state. And I've been trying to get them active, and they need funding for certain things. And, but their energy is on top. It's like the President Obama's campaign all over again.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been trying to, getting them the resources that they need. But recently I was appointed by the superintendent as the student advocate. So I go to in the court system and fight for the teens in the court and try to get them stable and, work with their teachers and stuff. So, with all this high school stuff, going on, that's what leads me to my big announcement.
Okay, that's absolutely wonderful. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm joined by my co-host, Jima. We have a couple of callers on the line. Freddie Poindexter Scott, as well as Leo Baron Hicks. And we have our very special guest today, Lawrence B. Jones. And so if you want to have any questions for either of us, just call us at 323-580-5712. Again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via the Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter at TaylorMade101. And, of course, I'm streaming live on my website at TaylorMade101.com. And just click on live broadcast. And now, for the moment we've all been waiting for, the big announcement. So, Lawrence Jones, what is this big announcement?
Well, Mr. Cook, the big announcement is, I've been pressured by a lot of my colleagues and my peers to run for this special position called Texas Young Democrats High School Chair. And that I've decided to run for it, and the election is in April. So I've started campaigning already, starting now. My website is up, SenatorLawrenceJones.com. Now, this big position, Texas Democrats High School Chair, is all the high schoolers have a Democrat party or, just some little organization that is dedicated by the Democratic Party. And I actually will be the chair of that, making sure they get financial support. I'll be traveling schools Texas-wide to give them the resources that they need. Those seniors that are now 18, I'll be getting them registered to vote. I will be basically in charge of everything for Texas high schoolers and below for the Democratic Party.
That is absolutely awesome. So how did you come to get this position?
Well, I have to be elected to it, but I was pressured by, a lot of our national leaders. The chairman of YDA, Rod Snyder, of Young Democrats of America, after seeing Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Vice President Joe Biden, and they were noticing things about me and, just interacting with them. We have people, the parliamentarian of Young YDA, Young Democrats of America, they were just wanting me to do this. And I thought about it, and I thought I had too much on my plate, but, I'm only junior senator for a few months, and I thought I could do it. I really think that funding is an issue, and I think I do have that ability to raise money, to bring energy with our youth. And I think with us Democrats losing power in Congress, I think we need this extra energy.
Outstanding. Now, you said that you have to be elected to this position. So
yes.
how can we at Current Events help go out and help help you get the vote out to support you?
Well, in April is our election for Texas for our YDA officers. That is composed with all young high school Democrats, YDA, Young Democrats of America. If you're below 30, all of these Democrats are going to be voting for this one person to represent their high schoolers. So it's just not the high schoolers that are voting. It's all the Democrats in Texas that are active within their party. So you got close to 3,000, 4,000 to actually show up to vote for this event.
Wow, that's amazing. I am so glad you allow current events to help break that news. We're so excited. Is there anything that we could do here to help support you? I know you talked about your website. Give the listeners again your web address.
Yes, it is www.SenatorLawrenceJones.com. And as you go to the first page, you'll see me on the front screen, and there's a big sign called Donate. I'm nonprofit. I'm all for the people, but it takes funding to do these certain things. You know, I travel around Texas, getting the word out. You know, sometimes I go to D.C. to work on legislation, and if you could just donate to me, you can go to the contact page and contact me on Facebook or Twitter, or call my office with your concerns, write letters. You know, I want to know what's going out there. You know, I have a direct contact with the governor. I meet with him to tell him the issues that we need. And it takes support to do that.
Outstanding. Once again, you're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, and we were joined by the junior senator of Texas, which is Lawrence B. Jones. And he just made his big announcement. And with the vote is going to be coming up in April. Please go out and support him. I'm definitely going to be in your corner. You just let us know what you need here at Current Events, and we'll be out to support you.
Thank you.
All right, we want to move to the segment that that Leo Baron Hicks brought up a few moments ago, and it is about this email thing. Now, I wrote a blog about it, and on the blog, I headed the blog is You Got Mail. I don't know if you remember when LL first came out, they had the little sound that says, You've Got Mail. Now, I probably did a bad job of mimicking it, but for the most part, I used to be very excited when I come to my little, you know, 86 machine with 4 megabytes of RAM in it, and I would see I got mail, things in the nature. And here we are, you know, some 10, 20, about 18, 20 years later, and here's the story. A Rochester Hills man who says he learned of his wife's affair by reading her email on their computer faces trial on February 7th on felony computer misuse charges. Now, this guy, 33-year-old Leon Walker, used his wife's password to get into her Gmail account. Clara Walker filed for a divorce, which was granted this month. Now, Leon Walker tells the press that he was trying to protect the couple's children from neglect and calls the case a miscarriage of justice. Now, Oakland County Assistant Prosecutor Sidney Turner says that the charge is justified. Now, there was a privacy law writer, Frederick Lane, tells the Detroit Free Press that the law that they said he violated is typically used to prosecute identity theft and stealing trade secrets. He says he questioned if a wife can expect privacy on a computer she shares with her husband. Now, here's the question that I want to pose to the group that's on the phone. And I'm going to start with Leo Baron Hicks. Is this a violation of her privacy, Mr. Hicks?
I don't think so. I don't know. Let me share with you some issues I have with it, and then I'll share with you my conclusion.
Okay.
There not only is the privacy issue, i.e., they were living together, they were cohabitating, they were husband and wife, and I'm not sure that husband and wife have a reasonable expectation of privacy for a computer that both of them have access to. But I also have another issue, and that is marital property. If this is a marital property state that we're talking about, then everything acquired during the marriage is presumed to be marital property. So if the computer was brought in within the marriage, then the computer is marital property, and the husband has a right to it just like the wife does, and perhaps even the password is marital property. My problem with the whole case, though, is this is an outrageous abuse of prosecutorial discretion. There is no way in hell they should have prosecuted that young man.
Now, I would love to get Freddie Poindexter Scott's position on this as well. I mean, she's very astute, especially with respect to the law. So, Freddie, what's your take on this situation?
You know, in the interest of disclosure, I do have to say that I have a legal background. I'm a lawyer, although I don't practice in that specific area, which is a very specialized area of law. That being said, you know, for me, just reading the accounts of the story and even listening to the interviews that are on television, for me, the story just raised more questions than it did answer them. The statute, as you aptly pointed out, had a whole nother intent, and additionally, it basically is an anti-hacking statute. Mm-hmm. Nothing about this guy's behavior said he hacked into anything. The interview that I saw on television, of course, you can't just trust the facts, you know, from one source, but it appeared that he merely typed in a password that was kept in a book next to the computer.
Right.
You know, that is not what anybody who works in the technology field typically would consider hacking, number one. Second of all, again, there's that question of an expectation of privacy. You know, one may be able to make an argument, perhaps, that she went to great lengths to try to hide her password or created in him through her behavior some idea that, you know, this is my private information, not to be touched by you. I mean, you know, we're living in a technological age right now. But, you know, had it been 10 years ago and he pulled her diary under the mattress and read it and found out she was having an affair, would he now be charged with a felony? You know, so these are the type of questions that are raised in my mind, you know, just from a very I'm going back now to my New Year's resolution and just saying, you know, my instinct just says that when a husband lives with a wife and, you know, there's some idea that those marital rules are being broken, that they do, you know, that there suddenly becomes a responsibility even to find out the truth and try to govern yourself accordingly. Here, again, going back to the facts of the case, the person that she was purportedly having an affair with, allegedly having an affair with, was one of her former husbands, the guy who's charged is her third husband. And the second husband is the individual who she allegedly was having an affair with, and he had apparently been at least arrested on charges of abusing her in front of her child, which was the first husband's child. Mm-hmm. You know, so there were some legitimate concerns there, and I just really don't know if, you know, it's one thing to have those issues come out as a matter of a civil issue, but to have it come out in a criminal context just seems to be overreaching to me.
Mm-hmm. Now, since this is our Ask Jima segment, I must pose the question to my co-host. Jima, what do you think? What are your thoughts?
I'm going to say that I think it's a slippery slope that that they are trading on right now, and it's going to open up the doors. It's going to set some sort of precedent one way or another that I'm not sure our legal system is ready to really deal with. So just as a lay person with no background in law except for what I see on TV, I'm going to say I think this is a slippery slope. I don't think it's going to I don't think it's going to help anybody in any way, however this comes out, because it's already, you already got people talking about, well, it's my computer, it's my privacy, and, you know, but people find out how people cheat every day some kind of way. So, obviously, that in itself, you know, just leads you to just wonder, where is this going to end up at? So, it's a slippery slope. I don't think we're ready for it. I don't think our laws have caught up to where we are in terms of our technology.
I think it's an absolutely fascinating case because, for the most part, this gives the legal world something to really, really fight about, right? I mean, who's right, who's wrong, what technology can you use, what you can't use, you know, Facebook, social networking, Twitter, can I read your Twitter account? You know, we sharing information all the time. I think this is, I mean, I agree with you. This is going to open up the floodgate of litigation because, you know, one person posed a question, what's the statute of limitations on this? You know, can I go back to four or five relationships and say, hey, she read my email, you know? Or, you know, is it going to extend to the business community? People in the business community are all reading everybody's email. And so, you know, where do we draw the line? And so that's why I think this is an absolutely fascinating case because of that, because it's going to open up a new area of law that we haven't seen before. I also want to know, and he mentioned that he was protecting his kids. You know, if you're thinking, I'd like to get Leo to weigh on this. You know, if he's really trying to protect his kids, you know, is this okay? I mean, does the law protect him in any way? Leo, you still with us?
Well, I'd like to jump in there and just say that, you know, I think that's, again, additional issues that are raised with this case. I mean, you know, I think the issue of privacy stands on itself, but, you know, when you take it further and bring in the issues of family that are being alleged in this case, I think that you would be remiss if you didn't view that as a mitigating circumstance in his behavior. Now, of course, you know, they've been through divorce, and on the other side, I'm sure the allegation will be that that's unfounded or something of that nature. But, you know, I think that's something that definitely has to be considered when you look at this case. And even from the standpoint of the relationship of a husband and wife, you know, you talked about, you know, the implications that this could have in the business world. Mm-hmm. You know, the rules for unrelated people or in a business setting are, you know, typically isolated from those issues with family. You know, we've all watched the, you know, the Law and Orders and all the courtroom dramas where, you know, the husband can't be compelled to testify against the wife and so on and so forth because there is, you know, there are certain boundaries that lie within the relationship of husband and wife. And then, you know, so when you look at this case, you start to wonder kind of where all that plays in to it when they start to really develop the laws in this area, which I agree they need to. So you're right, and it almost makes me, for that reason, for the things that Eugene and Patrick, that you've brought up, you know, with respect to open up the floodgates with litigation in this area, it almost makes me wonder if there were additional motives and intents in this case in terms of, you know, how it all came to the fore. Because I think certainly when we talk about the statute not being meant to have to be used for this purpose, one has to wonder what was so special about this case that it became the quote-unquote test case.
You know, and Jim and I were talking about that exact same issue, the fact that this was an opportunity more than anything. It's the right timing. People understand social networking has saturated our society. So at some point we need to set a precedent. We don't know what that is, but it might not even leave the first court. But even us raising the question, beginning to have the dialogue about it, really gets us started thinking along those lines. And, of course, most of the things that the laws in our society have been tried because of our justice system. And so I'm reminded of, you know, Rosa Parks and her, you know, the issue with being on the bus, right? You know, there were many, many tired people that has been going through those situations for many, many years. You know, why Rosa Parks, you know? And so this is the Rosa Parks case. This is the case that's going to be brought to the forefront that says, okay, now we begin to argue. Now we begin to talk about this situation and maybe perhaps do something about it. And so I agree with you wholeheartedly. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. We're talking about the email case, of course, with Leon Walker. He was talking to the Oakland Press about the fact that they miscarriage of justice because they're trying to charge him with this email. So I also want to ask the two attorneys on the line about the fact that, is there any similar cases that you know about that, you know, for example, a personal property? You know, I don't know in which direction this case is going to take, but it seems like to me this is a privacy case, and there has to be some precedent with respect to privacy that exists. You know, for example, if I go into my wife's purse to get some gum, or she goes into my wallet to get get a dollar out or get something out of my wallet, is that something similar, or is this something totally different?
Pat?
Yeah. Leo, you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Pat. Can you hear me?
Uh-huh, I can.
Yeah, Pat. Okay, look, Pat, I don't, for one thing, I don't buy for one moment that this young man did what he did because he wanted to protect the children.
Okay.
That's just absolute nonsense. That whole rationale about I want to protect my children is just the defense that he's coming up with after he got prosecuted.
Okay.
Secondly, I don't think the issue is one of privacy. I think the issue is this a case of prosecutorial misconduct?
Okay.
Abuse of discretion, not misconduct, because the prosecutor can charge as she deems fit. But
mm-hmm.
is this a case of abuse of prosecutorial discretion? And I believe it is. Would she have charged him, for example, if he went in his wife's purse and found a note?
Right.
Probably not. She probably would not have charged him. She could have easily charged the young woman for any number of offenses. The problem with the criminal justice system is that there are so many laws that you can charge anyone for anything. And the question is not whether the prosecutor can charge him. The question is whether she should charge him.
Okay. So talk a little bit about the abuse of prosecutorial discretion.
Well, prosecutors, the criminal justice system gives prosecutors broad leeway in terms of what they can charge and when they can charge. And that leeway, that discretion is almost unfettered. So it depends upon the prosecutor's sound judgment as to when they will bring charges and what charges they will bring. Now, there are a few limitations. You can't prosecute or not prosecute based on invidious lines of demarcation like race, sex, religion, national origin, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, prosecutors can pretty much charge or not charge as they see fit. My question, though, is how does this case move us forward as a society?
Mm-hmm.
How does this case make us better? How does it enable husband and wives to get along better with each other?
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the broad scheme of things, who committed the most wrong, you apply your common sense. Is it more wrong for him to look at the email for a commonly used computer where the email wasn't even hidden, or was it a greater sin for her to engage in flagrante delicto when she was a married woman?
Hmm. Okay. All right, we're going to go to the phone lines. Right now, we're going to go to area code 313 and the last four, 6778. You're on Current Events with Patrick Cook. You there? Hello.
Good afternoon. I'm here.
Good afternoon.
I'm glad the brother brought that up. He brought up a point that has just been on my mind with
mm-hmm.
regard to this case as it relates to prosecutorial misconduct. I just
mm-hmm.
think that this case is a classic example of business as usual. This
mm-hmm.
prosecutor took time out to find a statute that's never been used in this way, to find a case that's never been tried this way against a Gmail account, which opens, as a technologist, we understand.
Right.
This is a Gmail account.
Mm-hmm.
So it opens up not just email, but to documents and to other shared cloud services that one may have under that one password.
Right.
So this is not really a winnable case based on how they normally perform by picking something based on precedential. We know we can try this case because this has been done previously. So I find it hard to believe that some people would say that this prosecutor wants to politically make a statement about this particular privacy issue, they could write their congressman. I just think that this is exposure and business as usual, willing to hang a felony on this dude quickly and using the system and their office to just roll over this parent, this father of two, who, even if it is just his defense, at the end of the day, he's the caretaker of those children. And this allows us to have a great discussion about business as usual of the justice system. Not, you know, not the sexy stuff. He was the third husband and the second husband, and she was messing around, and he busted her in a Mari Povich kind of way. This is business as usual. The system hanging a felony on a brother when they normally just wouldn't do that.
Right.
They wouldn't do that. Just doesn't happen. I mean, it's like the – I read about a study of the 1950 legislation about the criminalization of marijuana when it was assumed that weed smokers were black and Latino. It became a big deal, and you could get pulled over and picked up in the 50s for having possession. And during the 60s, when the marijuana smokers became blonde and hippies – and free love, then local communities began to change their own local laws to make things misdemeanors. And through the 70s, drunk driving was just a ticket and a ride home or spend the night. It was a joke on Andy Griffin to be a drunk and spend the night. And so when brown people do those things, we know that the crimes become felonies and those people are locked into the underclass.
Interesting. All right, we're going to take another
call. Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year. We're going to take another call. This call is area code 972. Last four is 4928. You're on Current Events with Patrick Cook.
How you doing, Brother Cook? I'm back.
Okay.
This case, first of all, I work in a court, and so I'm faced with cases every day. Now, this belongs in a civil court, number one. This is not a felony issue. This is a family issue right here. And I feel like that our government is getting themselves in a big load of trouble. You can't tell a person that they have access to their spouse's medical records, that they can pull the plug if they're in a coma, but they can't access their email.
Interesting.
This is crazy. You can't tell a couple that what's his is hers, what's hers is his. Once you become married in that state, everything is shared, and you can't do that. You can't. If my judge that I work for, what she said, if it were to come to her court, she would throw it out in a heartbeat. But that's just her.
Wow. Now that is an interesting point you brought up. The fact that though the spouses have the power to make those decisions when it comes to life issues, and all of a sudden now we want to take that out of the person's hand with respect to email. That
right. In medical records, you know, we're talking about somebody that has birth certificates, Social Security. If they wanted to be them, they could be. You know, it's just a crime shame.
Okay.
Hey, Patrick, let me ask you something, though.
Okay. Go ahead, Leo.
Okay. Talking about prosecutorial abuse of discretion, okay? Again, now she can charge, so it's not prosecutorial misconduct. But the question is whether she should charge. Let's assume that the brother is guilty as hell, right? He looked at the wife's email, right? He didn't do it to protect his kids. He did it because he was cock-holded.
Right.
And he wanted to find out if his wife was sleeping with somebody else, okay? Where's the harm? What is the harm to society about what he did? How did he make society more dangerous by what he did?
And
what is the harm to his wife by what he did? He didn't batter her. It's not a physical offense, right? He didn't even steal it if the password was visible. He didn't even steal it.
Right.
He just busted her. Why would the prosecutor prosecute this and charge it as a felony?
Okay, that's your point. Not necessarily.
There's another interesting side note on this case that I don't think is, you know, has really been talked about much, and that is that he promptly let the first husband, who is the father of the child that is not his, know that she was having this affair with the second husband who had been arrested for beating her in front of the child. And that first husband promptly filed an emergency change of custody order, or, you know, to file proceedings to get a change in custody. And I don't know where that went. And so there's more backstory to this and how all those things fell on the timeline, I'm not sure. But, you know, there may have been an edge of vindictiveness. There may have been a true concern for the child. But in any case, it cost her a little more money and a little more grief. And so, you know, so I don't know how much. I doubt if that bore into the prosecutor's decision, but certainly I'm sure that that added a whole other layer to this that caused the wife some angst.
Mm-hmm. Now, Leo,
so,
you posed,
I thought that was an interesting fact.
Now, Leo, you posed the question about, you know, why is this charged as a felony, and I guess it's as opposed to a misdemeanor. Is that where you're going with that?
Well, again, I don't think it should have been charged at all.
Okay. Now, so you, do you think there's an issue when it comes to violating? I mean, did he really violate her privacy? I mean, is that something that we should be charging people for or not?
Well, I guess my answer is this. If it's his wife at the time that he did it,
uh-huh,
and she's having an affair, no, he didn't violate her privacy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if the if her computer and password was private, if you accept that argument, certainly her body and her affection was private to the husband.
Right.
She violated that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Absolutely.
I don't think he violated her privacy at all.
Yeah.
Well,
how can you...
Here's an interesting question that goes to what the question Patrick asked earlier about hearing of other cases of a similar nature. When we speak on the issue of privacy, does anybody remember the rash of cases, I believe it was in the 90s, where children were suing their parents for searching their rooms? And some of those cases were actually won where, you know, the judge said that a child had an expectation of privacy in their room under certain conditions within that parent's home. Can this case in any way, not considering the fact that it was an anti-hacking law that this is being charged under, but can this case be likened at all from a privacy standpoint to those?
Wow.
My thing is that you can't hack into something that's already yours. They are married. You can't hack into something that is yours. That computer is his, that book was his, and that email address was his.
50%.
Mm-hmm.
In my house, I can tell you right now, you know, and my computer is partitioned off. So everybody in my household has their portion or fragment of the main computer in the household. And, you know, while the father and I have access to everything, actually not everything, because he has access to everything, I don't have access to his. And I would truly be hacking if I got to this portion. He is clever. I don't know where his passwords are. I wouldn't know how to decipher them. So I would have to hack to get into his portion of the computer. So the question then becomes, because it's half my property, you know, does that mean that the partition that his portion sits on is partially mine? Therefore, you know, I can take that to some, you know, underground hacker and get his portion of it and then, you know, expect to be or not to be charged, you know, as a result of my behavior. I don't know, because it would take some stealth and some undoing to get into his portion of my computer.
Wait, but your situation is a little different, though, because you're a practicing attorney, and theoretically you're using your computer to aid and enable you to practice law. And as a practicing attorney, then, there's the attorney-client privilege, and you have certain ethical responsibilities to keep your legal work privileged.
So this is
secret.
Just a home computer. We have, like, 16 computers in my house. This is strictly a home computer, and, you know, honestly, we actually had this discussion when this case went down because I said, you know, look, you have access to my stuff on that particular computer. Now, granted, neither of us usually use that computer. It's mostly for the children. However, you know, that really
put a big question mark in my mind, like, should I be making you reveal your passwords in case I get a little curious? I won't have to worry about going to jail.
Well, but even if that happened, though, I'm sure you wouldn't want the DA in your county to charge either you or your husband with a crime. Look at it this way. If you have a joint account with your wife, right, you have a one-half undivided interest in that account.
Mm-hmm.
Would the district attorney prosecute that young man if he went and took all of the money out of the account?
Mm.
The answer is no.
Mm.
The answer is absolutely not. Because
by rule of law, they can do that on a joint account.
And how is that, though, differently, though, from a joint computer?
Well, I think the difference is that, the difference is that the law is set in one area versus the law is not set in the other area, and I think that's part of what even allows this case to be one of controversy is that the rules are unclear. Now, you know, morally speaking, and I'm completely playing the devil's advocate here because I absolutely don't believe this is a right thing that this prosecutor has done. But I think that what allows her to even make that argument is that arguably the law is not set in that area. Now, what she's doing is forcing the issue by taking a law not intended for such use to actually, you know, form the basis of going forward. But it's wrong. And then the other question of whether it should be a felony or not, you know, likely has to do with how that law is constructed, which also bears an element of unfairness for this brother who's charged with this felony because, you know, if the law were written in a true manner, meaning the intent was actually the process for this reason, would, in fact, it be a felony charge? So, I mean, you know, on that level, I agree with you. But just playing the devil's advocate, you know, I think that if one is going on a privacy claim, maybe an expectation of privacy could be created in a computer, depending on how it is configured to create that expectation of privacy.
One question. I'm sorry.
Or is she just trying to make a name for herself?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
Or is she just trying to make a name for herself? Is that the real motivation here?
I would argue that that is certainly a possibility.
I think this is an
untouched area of the law.
I think the bigger question is this: if the prosecutor was a male, would this be the same case?
Hmm.
Or if the snooper was a female and the female busted her husband in the Grande Toe.
Yeah, you're right. I thought about that too, as to whether or not it had more, if it was gender based biased, you know, quote unquote. Or if it would be the same, depending. I had that same thought process.
Wow.
I don't think so.
Okay, well, we're narrowing down to the end of the show here. And I would like to thank to all of the listeners for tuning in. And I would like to thank to all of you that called in because this is absolutely a fascinating case. I think we actually left here probably with more questions than answers, but I think it's something that we should pay attention to. There's definitely going to be more about this to come because, you know, for the point that Leo posed about, that he presented about, should this be a felony? Is this the right case to be trying in this particular instance? So it is really, really fascinating. I would like for you to kind of make sure you keep your eyes on this particular case. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook, a show designed to empower, educate, and engage our listeners with the right information at the right time to make the right decision. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. Remember to join us next week, Sunday at the same time. Don't forget to bookmark this site and visit my blog at tailormadetalkradio.blogspot.com. Now, I want to mention one other thing before I depart here, and that is the fact that TaylorMade, actually Cook Enterprises, as we call it, in conjunction with Google and Amazon, has joined forces with Amazon.com, and now we have a marketplace. So you can go out and purchase your gifts. You can go out and for holidays, for birthdays, and you can purchase them all through our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's at the marketplace. So Until next time, remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in to current events with Patrick Cook.